Hometown Ghost Stories contains serious and often distressing events and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm not sure if it's this movie or if it's just Boeing as a company that has made us scared of flights. Welcome in, everybody, to this edition of Hometown Ghost Stories Horror Movie Reviews. As always, I am your fearless host, Rob Coakley. Joining me tonight is just Dave, like the original times.
Yep. Here I am. Crack a beer.
Already
actually, we very rarely film these on Fridays. So it being Friday, I'm going to have a beer.
Yeah. So if it's a Friday for you, we encourage you to drink responsibly, unlike Dave, who will probably be slurring his words about Final Destination within 14 seconds. But it was time. We had to start this series on Final Destination. There's a new one in the works that's supposed to come out, I believe, next year. So we figured we'd get the ball rolling on this. And I'm going to be honest, Dave, I hadn't watched this particular Final Destination in quite some time. This is how old I am. I had this movie on VHS way back in the day.
Wow.
So I did watch it quite a few times, but I haven't watched it, I would say, minimum of 15 years. So it was nice to revisit it for better or worse. I definitely had a new perspective on it, which it didn't mean a worse perspective, but it's just like watching some of the character stuff, which we'll get into. You had to have seen this movie before we did it for the show, right?
Yeah, but like you, I haven't seen it in years, and there's a reason for that, which I'll explain after the synopsis.
Okay, let's get into the synopsis of this movie.
Let's get into the synopsis then. Final Destination 2000, directed by James Wong, written by Jeff Reddick. Alex Browning is embarking on a road trip to Paris. Alex experiences a premonition. He sees the plane explode moments after leaving the ground. Alex insists that everyone get off the plane, and seven people, including Alex, are forced to disembark. All watch as the plane actually explodes in a fireball. He and the other survivors have briefly cheated death, but will not be able to evade their fate for very long. One by one, these fugitives from fate fall victim to the Grim Reaper. So this is a super unique movie. Actually, they're all, like, this whole series is unique.
Yeah.
In the sense that the antagonist is not a physical being. It's death. It's the embodiment of death, or lack of embodiment, however you want to say it. And I don't know of another movie that's really like that. This one, I think, is at least the first of its kind. And
don't worry, someone in the comments will let us know that there's some innocuous movie from Germany from 1946 that did something similar.
Well, I hope they do, because if there is one out there, I would like to know. So fair enough. Just leave us that one-star review and correct me, and we'll move on. But this one, I think it's also unique because this is the first of the franchise, but it's not the flagship movie of the franchise. It's not the one everyone thinks of when they think of Final Destination. You talk about Final Destination, people immediately start talking about the log truck from the second movie. That is the flagship movie of this series, of this franchise. And it was kind of funny going back to it and watching it, because I haven't watched it in a long time. And it was because anytime I'm going to go back and watch Final Destination, it's always the second one, because in my opinion, the second one is the best one. But this one was also pretty good. And going back and watching it, it did hold up. There was some cheesy acting here and there. Some of the acting overall was pretty good, but I think there was a couple of situations where the acting wasn't great, and you had some cheesy CGI. But this is one of those weird franchises where the CGI gets worse the further down you go. So this one actually, in comparison to the other ones, holds up. So.
Yeah, I think the acting is something to touch on. And I'm going to say, I don't know if I fully agree with you with the Final Destination 2 being the flagship movie. I think it definitely has the flagship open. And I don't want to dive too much into that until we get to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I still do think of this movie when I think of Final Destination, because this movie was a big deal when it came out, like in terms of like horror, because it was so different, mm-hmm. right? You do have this quote unquote, it's a slasher, like in a sense,
yep.
without there being an actual villain, to your point. And this is in an era where slashers had kind of died down. Right. The 90s kind of took the slasher formula, like it was beaten to death by then, you know, pun not intended, but like, and Final Destination came along, like you said, found a way to freshen up that formula. Like you're still getting the kills. I think there's a kill that everyone goes to in this movie. I want to talk about another one in a second, but let's talk about the acting real quick, because of everything, that's what stood out to me in this one that I didn't remember. And I think it's because
that it was good acting or not good acting.
Not good. A lot of good. There's some good actors in this and there's some good performances.
Mm-hmm.
They're fine. But I think this movie is definitely, first of all, while I was watching it, it looked dated, right? Like I couldn't believe how dated it looked when it came out. What did it come out? 2000, I believe it came out.
Year
2000. In the year 2000.
But it definitely felt like mid-90s, maybe early 90s.
Right. And I think it had a lot of the bad tropes of those movies as well, where everyone's a certain character from a high school, right? You mm-hmm. have your jock, you have your nerd, your popular girl, your outcast. Like, that had been done. That's where this movie went wrong, in my opinion. It just, mm-hmm. it was so structured in that way. And I think that they put a lot of these characters into a box and they kind of were going off of what they had seen in other movies, what other people were used to portraying, like what they thought people wanted to see. The guy that played the jock in particular, or like the bad boy or whatever you want to call him,
Kerr Smith.
I felt bad for him because I didn't even think that he was a bad actor. Mm-hmm. I think he was given bad material.
Yeah, bad script.
Like his character actions just make no sense 90% of the time.
None. It made no. I agree with you in that this was definitely a poorly written character. And an example, in my opinion, would be when he's just super mad at Alex, the main character, even after he literally saved his life. He just continued. He was mad at first that he got him kicked off the plane and they're going to be late to Paris. He's mad justifiably, but then he just stayed mad after. Yeah. You should have been like, dude, thank you so much for saving my life. But he's just still mad. It made no sense. And the grudge that he had against him just made no sense. They just wanted there to be this adversity for no reason.
So set up something. Set up a reason for why he hates him so much from the past.
Yeah.
Like all it takes is a little bit of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
We were friends up until 9th grade and then this happened, right? And then you could be like, okay, this is why he hates this guy for better or worse. Like he's always going to hate him. But like, it just was so like, that was bad. His girlfriend, she was pigeonholed with her role, like really poorly. The best friend was fine. Like he was fine, but it was just such a throwaway character. Devin Sawa was fine. I thought he played his role great. Right. There was a lot of other good acting performances. I don't think there was poor acting performances, just poorly written characters.
Yeah. Sean William Scott was, you know, he's the same. You get the same performance from him in every movie he's in. He's very typecast. And he's a good actor, but you're going to get from Sean William Scott what you get from Sean William Scott, and it's Stifler. He's just Stifler in every movie.
Well, he was a lot more nerdy in this movie than he was as Stifler, right? Like you got...
Well, sort of. Yeah, sort of. So he was written as a nerd and he plays a nerd, but he's still Stifler. He's just Stifler trying to read a different script. And yeah, to be fair, I mean, this came after.
Yeah, I don't know if it was... I don't know how close to filming it was when it came out. If they expanded, I didn't really dive into that. And for him, yeah, in these early movies, he was like that. I actually like some of the more recent stuff that he's done. Like The Goon was a really good movie.
I didn't see it.
I don't know if you've seen that, but that was a...
Was it horror?
No, it was...
I didn't watch it.
No, it wasn't a horror movie. He played like one of the last hockey enforcers. It was a really good movie. So that one was good. He's in a horror movie or like an action horror comedy that I do want to see where he plays a bad guy. I haven't watched it yet. I forget what it's called.
He just played Sean Thornton.
Yeah, he just basically played Sean Thornton.
That's because that's who he was.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Boston Bruin. We don't need to talk about hockey anymore. But so you brought it up. This movie was written by James Wong, not James Wan. And James Wong actually worked on The X-Files, and they took this script. This was a script that he had originally written for The X-Files that didn't get made and made it into a full-length movie, which is something that I found interesting.
That is interesting.
From that. So that's how this movie actually came about.
I said James Wong, right? Not James Wan.
No, you said James Wong. You said the right thing. It's so close that I just want to make sure that people aren't confusing it with the director and creator of like the Conjuring series and stuff, because we have a Boston accent and sometimes we don't pronounce all our letters and you know, that could be confusing. So I think we've kind of covered the acting. I think we should jump into some of these kills.
We should. And this is what makes this franchise stand out from a lot of other franchises, because there's plenty of gory horror movies. I wouldn't consider this gore porn, but some of the kill scenes are so unique and just out of the box, and less so in this one than in future ones. But this one still had some pretty unique ones.
Yeah, this one had some unique ones and some brutal ones. And what I actually love that they do in this movie is, you know, the kill's coming. And they start showing you things around the area and like foreshadowing, and it makes you guess what's going to happen.
Yep. And they started with the first kill in this one, which is something, like you said, I hadn't seen this movie in such a long time. So I was almost surprised when I went back and watched this recently, where they actually started this trope that they created in the first movie, and it wasn't something they adopted later on in the franchise. It was from the beginning. They started giving you these fake clues to make you think you're going to be able to figure out how they're going to die, but they always end up shocking you and surprising you.
Yes. And so we get into the scene with the friend. Was the friend's name Todd, if I recall correctly?
Yes.
So Todd's in the bathroom, and the first thing we got to start with is he's shaving his face and he has no facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing?
He's just practicing, maybe.
Like, why are we doing this? So then they start, the water starts coming into it. You're like, okay, is he going to slip and fall and hit his head? And they have the razor going. He nicks his face. And there's just all these things, and the wheels are spinning. And we're going to jump into a few more of these kills. I think the iconic kill in this movie is the bus kill.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone, it just kind of shocked everybody. It comes out of nowhere, where she steps off the road and gets hit and she's just gone.
Yep.
But I think that the best kill in this movie is this kill in the bathroom, because
it's tense.
It's so intense. It is brutal. It is one of the most, and it makes you feel uncomfortable. Unlike, you know, we've watched horrible stuff happen in movies like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and Terrifier.
Martyrs.
Martyrs was tough, man. Yeah. Martyrs was, I'm not going to compare it to Martyrs, because Martyrs was a tough watch.
Yeah.
But I thought this kill was a tough watch. As you watch it just felt really real and you were just like, oh man, this sucks. And the eyes go bloodshot red and everything like that. So to me, I know the bus is always going to be like the one that people think of with this particular movie. But when I think of this movie going forward, I'm going to think of how uncomfortable this death made me. And I don't think it happened. You said there's creative kills in the franchise and you know, they're quote unquote fun for horror fans, but this one was a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. This one was not fun. So when I look at the franchise as a whole, I mean, I think some of the most creative kills are in Final Destination 2, and these ones are a little bit dialed back. That first one, to your point, is not fun. And it's, it makes you, like you said, uncomfortable, and it's definitely tense and it's bleak. And it's really the only bleak scene out of any of these movies, in my opinion. And I don't really get that feeling of like, just a like feeling of almost darkness as you do in that scene where he accidentally kills himself, but it looks like a suicide. So it's just a very dark scene, and they shot it really well. And that point about the bloodshot, I thought was a very effective touch to that scene.
Yeah, it was shot really well, really uncomfortable. I'm not going to say that you don't feel that again in another movie in this franchise. I'm guessing you don't, to be honest. I haven't watched them in so long that I don't want to say that for sure.
Yeah. And well, then beyond three, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Get ready to waste our time at some point in the future.
I know.
And for the movie we're going to watch for the next one, we are going to be wasting our time. So we've been watching too many good movies. We have to mix in a bad one. So
you got one picked already?
I do have a bad one picked for us. Love it. So those are the two most iconic kills. I think there's some other ones. I think the teacher one's a little overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I think
the fire and
I think that was a little too much. And I almost feel like they went for shock value on that one. And it was like, we could have, I think less would have been more on that scene. I know they wanted him touching the knives so that he could, be framed for being the killer and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm. They kind of almost abandoned that too, though. I feel like they set him up to be, they set him up to look like he was the one murdering everyone. And then they almost abandoned that as quickly as it came on, which I think was kind of a weird, like they tried to cram too much into this maybe towards the end there. It did feel a little bit backloaded and kind of rushed towards the end. Mm-hmm. That would be one of my negatives for this.
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, I agree that kill scene was pretty, pretty bonkers.
Yeah, I think another way they could have done that too with the abandoning or like worrying that he was the killer is they should have had that suspicion the whole time, but each kill should have been able very easily debunkable that he wasn't the killer. Like obviously he didn't push the girl in front of the bus. There was 500 witnesses for that one, right? Mm-hmm. And she dies there, and the plane, they actually did this with the plane. They show how it actually, what caused it to ignite and everything. They're like, well, it couldn't have been him for that one. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't there when, the kid died in the shower. That was ruled a quote unquote suicide. So I think they could have gone through, even though, and maybe one of the detectives should have still been suspicious of him a little bit and, play off of that a little bit. But yeah, I think there's good and bad in this movie for that. And speaking of that, there is a scene in this movie that if they didn't hire the right actor for, would have been the goofiest fucking scene in a horror movie of all time. Which? And that is the scene where they break into the mortuary or the funeral home and they have Tony Todd playing the mortician.
Yep.
And I don't know if there's ever been better casting in a movie than Tony Todd.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, he nails that role. And as I was watching him, and I loved every minute of it. It's like one of my favorite scenes of the entire movie because he's just so good at Tony Todd in that scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, can you imagine if they just hired some like no-name actor that tried to ham it up a little bit for this and and just like how bad they probably would have had to cut the scene.
Yeah.
Right. And I just thought it was such a fun scene to have him in there. And it even goes over the top with him just starting to stick things in their dead friend and the blood come out. I know. Like this actually doesn't fit this movie at all.
Yeah.
It fit some of the later ones, but this one, it didn't fit so well.
There are not a lot of actors that could have pulled that off. I'm having a hard time thinking of another one that maybe could have. But like it's easy to think of one who definitely could not have pulled it off. Like if they got just like Kevin James or something.
Now we need to make this movie.
Kevin James as William Bloodworth.
Yeah. It's just something you would never see. I think getting that horror icon for that scene was important. I think maybe Robert Englund could have pulled off a good version of it, but I don't think anyone would have topped what Tony Todd did in this particular scene. And he comes back in the series, but this one, he knocked it out of the park. Like, I just was like, this scene, if you're watching this movie and it's not him, it just would not fit. And I was pretty excited that he was in it. I love that scene for sure. It was so bonkers, though. That scene was so bonkers.
Yeah, it really was. But it was great. And, like, not to beat it to death, but he was the perfect casting for that.
Yeah. So I'm glad they kept that in. I'm glad they hired him for that. Let's talk about the ending of this movie.
Sure. Sid Haig could have pulled that role off, I think, too.
Yeah.
That would have been a good one.
Sid Haig is, he was so good.
Yeah.
Legend. I don't know any horror movie I saw him in that I didn't enjoy at least his performance at a minimum.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the ending of this movie, because the ending of this movie, the original ending actually didn't make it into the film. So this movie's ending was kind of in hell over the course of production, and they filmed an ending where, well, we'll talk about the ending right now, where Devon Sawa's character goes up to help Ali Larter, and he grabs this electrical thing where you're like, well, he's not going to survive that, because that's not how electricity works. And he starts getting burnt and thrown back and somehow survives. And everyone's like, I'm just watching it like, that's not how that works.
No, that's not how that works.
That's not how that works. Nope. But he survives it. They end up going to Paris, which was odd. Was that
How'd you get there?
Yeah.
How the fuck did you get there? You got on a plane to Paris? No, you didn't.
You got on a plane and went to where all your dead friends died going to?
Yeah.
That was the decision the three of you made? Then we get this Dark Knight ending where it's just the same ending as Dark Knight, where they're all sitting at this cafe, and it might have even been the same cafe for all I know. And, you know, you start going through, oh, it's not over, blah, blah, blah. And then you get the sign fall and then end credits, right? Mm-hmm. Where you kind of get that vague ending. But the original ending was actually him dying. He was supposed to die. He did die. And Ali Larter was pregnant, which I will also say they did not do a good job setting up that romance.
No, nope, not at all.
At all.
If they rolled with that, like, oh, she's pregnant, I've been like, how?
Yeah.
How'd she get pregnant? I mean, cool. Who's the father? Because they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't build that relationship. Not they at hinted all. Towards it, but not even. Maybe not even.
Right. Right. They just, it wasn't even set up well. So test audiences hated it completely. Mm-hmm. So they went and reshot another ending where Devon Sawa's character gets decapitated by a helicopter.
Like it.
Audiences hated that ending. So they spent an additional $2 million to film that ending that we got, which is maybe better, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's better than the original ending for sure.
I just think that the audience hated it because they didn't want to see that character die.
Right.
So who gives a fuck if they hate it? That's how the movie ends. Do it. Wow. Do the helicopter.
Wow, Dave is so... I mean, the helicopter would have been fine. That, I think the original ending with her being pregnant at the grave...
And that would have been dumb.
Would have been way dumber. I didn't mind them ending this on that cliffhanger of the sign falling, though. Like, I thought it was fine. I don't think it was amazing. I think there should have been some more definitive action there where he actually does die and the other two are just kind of like, oh shit, and the movie ends, you know?
Yeah, because I'm thinking they might have left it open and ambiguous in case they wanted to have him back for the second one,
right?
And left it just in case that he was unavailable for the second one, or they wanted to move a different direction, that they could have just said he was killed off, which they ended up doing.
Exactly. So, which kind of felt like a letdown in the second movie almost, right? So
not really.
We'll get into it at another point in time.
I think I saw the second one before the first one, to be honest, chronologically.
Which is a weird thing we used to do back in the day. Because you're
I don't think the first one wasn't that big a deal. I don't remember it being that big of a hit. I could be wrong.
Oh, I do. I remember it.
What was it?
Box I remember
getting $212 million in the box office.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal when we were in school. So right. I remember everyone talking about Final Destination when it came out. So it and that's why it spawned such a big franchise, because of the popularity of the first one leading into the second one and going into it. I don't know if I have too much more to say about this particular movie. It was, you know, shot well, kills are decent, some poorly written characters, some good acting performances, cinematography pretty good in this.
I feel like if you're going to, I mean, you have to credit or discredit cinematography if the movie's shot in 2000 and it looks like it was shot in 1991, right? That's cinematography.
I guess that's a good point. Because that is the first thing I noticed with this movie as I was watching, is it felt older than it was, which right. I don't know if I've ever said that about a movie that had like a decent budget.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it had a great budget, but it had a budget, right?
Yeah, like I can't find the budget.
There's an actual budget in this movie, unlike some of the other ones. And so it's tougher to give it a pass for that. Is what I would say. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And another fun little tidbit about who was supposed to be cast in this movie.
Oh yeah.
So the original leads that ended up being Devon Sawa and Ali Larder were supposed to be, or they wanted Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst. So.
And this was after Spider-Man.
This is before Spider-Man.
This was before Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's a weird.
A weird parallel, right? Like that. Yeah. That's who they ended up wanting, and they ended up working together anyways. Okay. On Spider-Man. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think Tobey Maguire would have been good for that role. I don't know if I like Kirsten Dunst for. I thought Ali Larder actually crushed this role.
She was perfect for this role.
Yeah.
She nailed this role perfectly. I actually think she might have been the best cast person in this movie altogether, to be honest.
Yeah, she was definitely the best. I would say the best performance, although her character didn't really ever have to do anything crazy. She was never like overly emotional or anything. Oh, there was one thing I caught that I thought was kind of weird, and it was with her character. It's nothing that her character did wrong, but they were. All their parents picked them up from the airport after the plane crashed, and she's kind of sitting there by herself because she has no parents. Mm-hmm. And so Alex and his family drive her home, and they drop her off in front of her house, and she's standing next to the car, and the car pulls away, and she's standing there with her luggage. Fuck. Where'd you get that luggage? The plane blew up. It's like, wait a minute.
I missed that.
I was like, maybe it's carry-on bags, but one of them was pretty big for carry-on, and she had multiple bags. I was like, that's weird.
I didn't catch that. Next time I watch this movie, I'm going to be looking for that because I did not notice that. The other thing her character did weird was when she was at the kid's house when he died. Like, it made sense for Alex to be there, right? Because he wanted to go talk to him.
Why was she at Todd's house?
Why was she there? She's like hiding behind the tree. It's like, what are you doing, you weirdo? Why are you there? So I think they did try to explain it because they were trying to, they did not explore this well enough, in my opinion, if this is what they were going for. She was like trying to point out that she felt the connection with whatever Alex's vision was or something like that. So almost like she was drawn there, but you didn't let us know enough on that is what I would say. I felt like you should have let us know if that's the direction. I think that's kind of the biggest problem with this movie. And I understand that it's got the right runtime, but maybe we needed to trim some fat and focus more on certain elements of it. And maybe that was the problem, like, because maybe the characters could have been written a little bit better. Maybe the story could have been produced a little bit better. Maybe they had to cut too much out, and that's why the movie is what it is. But all in all, I don't think it was a bad movie. I think it's a very watchable movie, and I do enjoy it. Do we want to get into some ratings?
Yeah.
All right. I'll go first. I'm going to give it a 3.7 out of five.
Nice.
Because I think it's watchable. The dated thing I can't get past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just some of the characters. I usually when you see a bad character, you're like, that's a bad acting performance. We got on all over this. I felt bad for some of these actors. And that's why I'm giving it a 3.7, because I think it's not bad acting. I think it's bad writing. So
yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think that I got to give credit to this movie for being as unique as it is and being so different and outside the box from other horror movies. And really, it kind of invented its own tropes. It spawned a massive franchise. And credit where credit's due. I can't give it a 4 because of a few different things. One, I thought the writing was kind of sloppy. It felt a little rushed at the end. It was pretty well acted for the most part. But again, some of the character writing wasn't as good. So I have this at a 3.9. Overall, I like it. I think it's very rewatchable. And aside from the fact that it looks older than it is, it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, that's going to be our review of Final Destination. Our next movie, Dave, are you ready to hear the movie I am going to give us to watch? Because we need to have some fun on the next review, I've decided. I mean, not that this wasn't fun, but...
I always have fun.
We always have fun, but we're going to have a lot of fun with the next movie because we're going to watch 2003's House of the Dead from Uwe Boll. And I don't know how familiar you are with him as a director, but we will get into it in 2 weeks when we review that movie.
Hell yeah.
So if you haven't watched it, watch it so you can do a review with us in your head as we're talking about it. Anyways, that's going to do it for this week's horror movie review. That was Dave. I'm Rob. Jesse, conspicuous by his absence. Off being a father and stuff, like having to do adult things.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. We'll catch you next time. Peace.